Monster Man, Episode 374, Crawling Claw to Crustacean, Comma Giant.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. But before we do that, it's time to take care of some business. That is to say, I gotta thank a new Patreon backer. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. So thank you very much for your support, Chris Newton. Everyone else, I know that I have plugged Chris's show, MDC, on here before. Indeed, I guest co-hosted a miniseries of it. But again, if you're listening to Monster Man and you enjoy it, there's a good chance you might enjoy Mecha Dumbcast. So give it a listen. So Chris, thanks again. And let's take a look at some monsters. First up, the Crawling Claw. This is just what it sounds like. It's a sort of an animated severed hand, or it doesn't have to be a human hand. It can be the paw or claw of some kind of animal. And they creep around by themselves. They jump on you. If you're wearing metal armor, they can give you a biff. And if you're not, I guess the idea being that if you're not wearing armor, then it's more flexible and you can be throttled. And they can give you like a, you know, they can choke you. This is weird. This is an example of something that comes up in a lot of D&D monsters, but that we haven't seen a huge amount of in the Monstrous Manual, because in general, I think one of the impetuses in 2nd Edition was to try and kind of like standardize the rules a little bit more, because I am reasonably certain that we've seen a number of other monsters with choke attacks where metal armor was not important. Now, like, realistically, if you were wearing like plate armor, yes, absolutely, it is rigid, and it may very well have a piece that curves up to protect your neck. I mean, you best protect your neck. Or if you're wearing a great helm, I think it would be quite difficult to get your hand up around the neck of somebody wearing some types of plate armor. But if you were wearing like a mail coat, you can be throttled just as easily as someone who's wearing this alleged leather armor. Remember that if you're wearing armor that is made of leather, it's probably thick enough to be quite stiff. It might not flex so much as all that. It's not leather like your leather jacket. I mean, not that armor in D&D was ever realistic, and I don't expect it to be or want it to be, but it then seems weird to quibble about this point. Anyway, whatever. The Crawling Claws are created by sort of wizardy types to act as servitors, and they kind of scuttle around doing little chores, right? Kind of effectively giving the wizard some extra hands, or they can be programmed to like act as guardians or whatever. The example that it gives is, you know, if anyone but me tries to get into this chest, kill them, which is a pretty tall order for the Crawling Claw, which is not all that tough. But I do feel like if anybody but me tries to get into the chest, bang this gong. That's a good order to give a Crawling Claw. The wizard, or whatever, can either give them these like programmed instructions or can command them directly. But to command them directly is quite tiring, as you can only do it for a certain length of time before you have to like take a rest, because there's just the mental focus required to direct not only yourself, but a bunch of other bodies is sort of tiring. Again, that's a good rule, but two things. First, there are lots of other creatures that are kind of directly mentally controlled. Or are there? You know, I said it, and now that I think about it, I'm not sure how many there really are. But I don't think this is a concept that we've encountered before. And secondly, and perhaps more importantly, it feels like a weird limitation to put on something that's not all that powerful. Like, having three extra fists that can run around and biff people a little is pretty good. But it's not super amazing, so I don't feel like I would have to try and design limitations on it to sort of curb its power, you know? It's not that good. Although, I suppose it's all situational. You could definitely have a wizard who had a bunch of crawling claws that were basically sort of lab assistants, and if they're, what they're doing is they're like running around and they're pulling levers and they're opening tanks of acid and they're pushing the buttons and whatever, that's activating all of the sort of death traps and mad science devices in the lab, then that could be kind of fun. And that feels like a more valuable use for the Crawling Claw than kind of like biffing people. In a D&D combat, if you are a wizard, I feel like you can think of better things to do with an extra pair of hands than try to choke somebody. You don't want to enter into the bare knuckle brawling aspect of combat right now even if you are not putting your own fragile body at risk. It's just not where you excel. In later editions, the Crawling Claw moves away from being a wizard servitor and becomes a malevolent creature made from the severed hand of a murderer. So this is kind of like a hand of glory, right? Which could be the severed hand of a hanged man. The idea is that the kind of murderous spirit of the dead person remains in it. I feel like I should know the title of the movie about the guy who gets like a hand transplant from a murderer and then he's got murder hands. That was an angel, wasn't it? Chris Kane's character had an evil hand. Anyway, the Crawling Claw is pretty good. It's very sort of gothic aesthetic. I couldn't determine whether, I know it does appear in Ravenloft books, but I didn't know whether that's where it originally came from. But if you were to tell me that it was originally from Ravenloft and that there was some like creepy sorcerer in a haunted house and, you know, the people who were getting throttled were more kind of like unsuspecting guests in his spooky gothic mansion rather than plate armored paladins, I feel like that would work much better. So Crawling Claw, pretty good, very atmospheric, very on brand for a certain type of haunted house environment. Next up, we've got the crocodile. This is another one of those monsters that just, like, it has an entire page of text and I don't know that it merits it because I know what a crocodile is. You know, I'm not going to rehash this discussion every time this comes up. Obviously, you know, this was a design decision they made, and they disagreed with what I think about it, and fair enough. So, also, it is nice that this is a two-for-one page, because we also get the crocodile, comma, giant, which inhabits, quote, saltwater or prehistoric settings, close quotes, a phrasing that just raises more questions than it answers. I don't even know what that means in this context. Like, the historical accidents of extinction took place in our world. None of that makes sense. I've been on this before when we talk about dinosaurs. I guess maybe fundamentally part of my problem with this whole thing is that I tend to think that it is wiser not to ask too many questions about the ecology of a fantasy world, right? This is a completely different world that has completely different rules. It's weird that it has, you know, raccoons and things, that it has the exact same kind of evolution as our world did. So, but on the other hand, we want those things because fantasy is rooted in familiarity. So maybe just don't fuss about it. Don't fuss about it. Kind of antithetical to the premise of this show, though. Anyway, crocodiles are great. Giant crocodiles are also great. Nothing beats a nice, like, either river or pit full of man-eating crocogators. You know, someone's going to get kicked into there. People can be, like, dangled above it on a rope. You can be being chased by owlbears or whatever, and you got to cross the crocodile-infested river. Just all, you know. Crocodiles, alligators, either one, fantastic. Finally, we got the crustacean, comma, giant, which comprises both the giant crab and the giant crayfish. You get a great little Tony DiTerlizzi illustration here, and one of the things that I really like about it is that it has just like a little detail in the corner of it where there's like a discarded spear and like a kind of horned, you know, cartoon Viking helmet. And it's these little bits that I think kind of make, I mean, it provides a scale for what would otherwise just be a picture of a crab. And it brings the whole thing to life somehow. You know, again, these other artists are doing a perfectly okay job. They're working to a brief that I think maybe isn't a very good idea, but that's not their fault. But DiTerlizzi is really shining because, you know, within the limitations of that brief, he's making it his own, and it's so good. Anyway, we get a huge amount of detail on the ecology of these monsters, even though these monsters are basically crab but big. But there's this huge section on ecology, and it's also just kind of like crab but giant. And furthermore, I'm not sure that makes sense. Like, I'm not sure that a crab that was the size of a car, but bigger, I mean, they get to be like 15 feet long. That's just under 5 meters. For my metric listeners, I'm not a biologist, but I have to assume that a 15-foot-long crab would actually have a radically different ecology than its smaller counterparts, right? It wouldn't just, like, you know, go along the shore looking for bigger ocean life to feed on than the littler crabs. Surely, again, I don't expect any of this to be naturalistic, but if it's not going to be naturalistic, and it's not going to be exciting, I don't know why it's in here. Actually, I had a recent conversation with a friend about this and about the ways in which the kind of like covering every possible base was intended to sort of prevent arguments among teenagers. I think it's a fair point, and it might be one that we return to talk about in a future episode, but not next episode, which is going to be a special episode. So in the middle of the week, Patreon backers at the $2 or higher level are going to get a new episode of Patron Deities in which we're going to talk about Set, the bad guy, or is he, of Egyptian mythology. And then at the end of the week, we got a special episode that I'm really looking forward to based around a team of classic comic book characters. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.